You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Visit your local Interstate Battery retail store or visit their website at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, you knuckleheads, welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we have returning guest, Dan Corse. He's back on the podcast, and we're going to talk about the biggest buck he's ever shot, and that was in 2018, this past season. We kicked the podcast off, actually, talking about how he started hunting at the age of 8 with his dad in Mississippi, a life change move to Pennsylvania, hunting the public ground out in Pennsylvania, and then transitioning to his home state of Texas now. And so this podcast is kind of a hunter profile podcast mixed with a big buck success story podcast. And he chased this deer in 2016, 2017, and in 2018, he was lucky enough to harvest this buck. And that is what we talk about today. Just a really good podcast, kind of highlighting the average Joes of the world, and kind of going back to the grassroots of what this podcast is all about. Now, before we get into this podcast, I just want to say, keep an eye out for the new trailer for the new short film that is coming to the Sportsman's Nation, right? It kind of highlights my turkey hunting season with my wife and my family. So keep an eye out for the trailer. And then later this month, we should have the film up and ready to go. So keep an eye out for the trailer. It should be up the end of the day, Monday, or sometime on Tuesday. I'm really excited about this because not only is the footage kick-ass, but I feel the story is going to be kick-ass too. And I really want all of you guys to share it and keep an eye out for it. So let's do that. Now, also, we got to talk about Ripcord Arrow Rest, right? I don't really get excited about, like, I get excited about hunting gear, but I'm not... It's on a different level with this company because I get jacked up when I know that I don't have to worry about a product performing. And that is exactly what I get when I have a Ripcord Arrow Rest on my bow. Dude, like I said, I've been using their Arrow Rest for God knows how many years. I want to say going on 10, if not more, 13 maybe. And I haven't had one failure. And I beat the shit out of my equipment, right? Mud, water, grime, whatever. And their products work every single time. And man, I get excited about that. So go to their website, ripcordarrowrest.com, and take a look at all the products that they offer, because they have limb-driven systems, they have cord-driven systems, they have some really cool, like what they call like exchange blade angle, thumb lock launcher, click micro adjustments. Like, they're taking the micro adjustment to a whole new level, right? Being able to really hone in and center your arrow, and that all this does is just increases accuracy in your shot, right? So ripcordarrowrest.com, go out, and it's an American company, veteran owned. So just a couple more really cool things about the company. So I'm done talking. Let's get into today's hunter profile big buck success story with my man, Dan Corse. All right, on the phone with me right now, Mr. Dan Corse. Thank you very much for being absolutely flexible with me, because I've dodged you it almost feels like a 2 or 3 months we've been trying to make this happen.
I know, man. I thought you were kicking me to the curb there.
No way. And I had this conversation with you a little bit before we actually started recording. I'm just like, man, there's a couple guys, you are one of them. And then I have one or two other guys who I keep telling, hey man, yes, I want to get you on. Yes, I want to get you on. And then I have to cancel on them because either I got a sick kid or my internet's not working or whatever. And it just by circumstance, it's all laid out to make me look like an asshole.
Yeah, don't worry about it, man. I appreciate us finally getting our schedule synced up. And my wife tells me all the time, I just have too much going on myself. So it's kind of hard to pin me down. And then the real background, though, is that I suffered through years of rejection from trying to date girls. And so I'm prepared for this. I'm prepared for it. So you don't have to feel bad.
That's funny. Oh, man. Well, it's good to finally hook back up with you because I love, you know, you're one guy I kind of communicate with off and on throughout the entire year. And I got some radio silence there for a while, you know, from you. And then it's like July, right, is your last message you sent to me. And then I get a picture and a message from in October 30th from you. And it's the picture of this beautiful buck, you and your bow laying there. And I'm just like, boom, yes, that's awesome. Because I love it. I love it when guys who are loyal to the podcast and the guys that I keep in touch with, you know, almost like a buddy, sends me the pictures. And it's almost like I'm following along with their season as well. And, dude, I got jacked for you. So congratulations.
I appreciate it, man. It's always a one-sided relationship, right? Because we get to listen to the podcast, and you don't get to hear too much from us.
Right.
And it's like we stay in contact with you, and it really feels like, well, I just talked to Dan the other day when I really just listened to another podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what we're going to be talking about today is this buck particularly. But I got on the phone with you, I was thinking to myself, man, I've had Dan on the podcast a couple of times. We've talked about gear. We've talked about, you know, how you hunt down in Texas and whatnot, but I've never really gotten the background per se on how you were introduced to hunting. So I think that's where I really want to start off with today and just ask you, how did you get into hunting?
Well, I started hunting, I was probably seven or eight. I think when I was seven, my dad would take me out with like his brothers and some friends of the family, you know, close friends of his. And we would go out. But when I was seven, I didn't have a gun. I just go out there. I had like sneakers, like some Chuck Taylors on. and it was miserable. I mean, my feet were wet. I was cold and, you know, I didn't even have long johns back then. I would wear my pajamas underneath my like jeans and stuff, you know, just to survive. And then when my dad, he really was just testing me to see if I liked being out there, right? And I kept saying, hey, Daddy, you know, I really like this, I really like this or whatnot. And then so the next year, I got a shotgun for a Christmas present. It was a single shot. H&R 410 gauge, you know, and I was like overjoyed. I had my own shotgun, you know, and so I really, in earnest, I started about 8 years old, and that blows a lot of people's mind. Like my wife is from Philly, and she says, you have a gun at 9 years old? You know, she's from inner city Philly, so it means something totally different to her, and I'm from Mississippi, so there it's like, well, don't all 8 year olds have guns, you know?
You're right.
So it was a little bit different, but that was my beginnings. And we hunted rabbits and squirrels and dove, you know, all the small game stuff. And then probably when I was about maybe 10 or 11, my dad was in a hunting club. You know, down south we have these hunting clubs.
Yep.
He was a member. And children could come, you know, your children could come. So I would go to hunting deer camp with him, and we would hunt. I started hunting deer, and I never had success really the first year or two when I had that 410. When I got about 13, my dad moved me up to a 20 gauge, and it's a bit of a cultural difference when you hunt deer in Mississippi, because Mississippi allows you to use dogs.
Yeah.
And it's another one of these kind of weird states now. But anyway, so the deer are running. You rarely see a deer that's not running for his life. I mean, it's just a blur going through a briar thicket. right. and you're just slinging buckshot or something at him, right?
Right.
And anyway, actually, the first deer I ever killed was a buck, and that blew my mind. It was like a little 6-point, but it, you know, it still hung up on the wall of my parents' house, and I was hooked. I was already hooked from, you know, 7 or 8 years old, but I was really hooked once I shot that deer, and it just took off from there.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome, man. Now let me ask you this. You got this mm-hmm. gun at such a young age. Did your dad ever have to take it away from you for misuse?
No. I never. I was really obedient. He laid the groundwork, the frame, the ground rules rather.
Yeah.
For the my use of the gun right off the bat, he taught me proper safe handling of the weapon and so forth. I really only had it out either to clean it or to pack it to go hunting, you know,
right.
pack it in the vehicle to go hunting. And that was about it, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I never got grounded from it. Grounded from other things, but never from hunting.
Right. Well, that's good, man. I'll tell you, I have to share a quick story. My grandpa got me a pellet gun. He had he had a pellet gun at his house, and my grandparents were me and my brother's babysitters growing up. So my parents basically dumped us off at a farm, and then they would go to work. Well, my grandpa one day said, "Do you know how to use this thing?" And he handed me a tin of pellets and a pellet gun. And I was like, "Yeah, I know how to use it." So he's like, "Here's the safety. Here's how you use it. Whatever. Here's the pump. I think it was a pump action." And he says, "Okay, go shoot some sparrows in the barn." Well, I got bored with shooting sparrows for a little bit. Then me and my brother hid behind a bush over a bird feeder, and we started shooting songbirds like cardinals and blue jays. They were coming to grandma's, fancy bird feeder. And my grandpa, I remember him pulling in the driveway, getting out of his truck and walking up to us, and was like, "What are you doing?" Like a pile of dead robins and cardinals and just like finches and all this stuff that were visiting and I said, "Grandpa, you told us we could go shoot birds." And he didn't even get mad. He took the gun away and he said, "Okay, go play somewhere else before your grandma sees this."
Yeah. I had a pellet gun too. And before I was, probably when I was about 6. And we used to do the same thing, shoot all the sparrows and blackbirds and songbirds and whatever. We actually shot some squirrels too. We had pecan trees in our yard.
Yeah.
And the squirrels would just ravage the pecan trees. So we would shoot them all the time too.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Cool. All right. So, you start getting into hunting at a pretty young age, and did that kind of escalate into like, when did that escalate into like a serious habit? I mean, did you go into high school or middle school, or I guess back then it was junior high, and start getting into like sports, or did you just kind of continue down the hunting trend?
I played a little bit of sports through probably junior high or early in junior high. And then, I wasn't the best athlete by any stretch. And I was just kind of like more into academics. Most people probably know me as being a pretty smart kid. So yeah. I just stuck with the books, but I was infatuated with hunting.
Yeah.
And by the time I got to high school, there were so many like social events, like parties and, games and parties after the games and stuff like that I skipped because I was like, "I got to go to bed. I got to get up at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. I'm going hunting." And they were like, "What?" I was like, "Yeah, I'll see y'all later, Sunday or Monday or whatever." And a lot of people that just didn't register with them. But when you're bitten by this hunting bug,
yes,
man, it's all over but the crime,
That's right.
And, when I went to college, even I went to college away, about 3 hours away in New Orleans. Right. And when I became an RA, the dorm counselor or whatever, we would get the choice of either spring break off or fall break, which is Thanksgiving break off. And I would take Thanksgiving break off so that I could go home and go hunting during November, you know. And most kids are like, what? Don't you want to be off at spring break so you can go to Florida or go do this? Or, I'm like, no, are you crazy? I'm going home to go hunting, you know. So I was pretty eaten up with it at a young age.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about what it was like to hunt in Mississippi in your youth.
Well, you know, Mississippi, it's a lot of hardwood. Well, the area of Mississippi that I hunted in, it's a lot of hardwood, creek bottoms, river bottom. Most of my deer hunting, we were probably about, say, 15 miles from the Mississippi River. So you get all these drainages that funnel towards the river. And there's some deep, deep gullies and steep ridges. And the terrain is just atrocious. Plus, it's so thick, you know. That's one of the reasons why I didn't hunt with a rifle until I was an adult. Because that part of the state, it's like you're just hunting in a thicket, you know. And sometimes the deer are almost like rabbits. You got to almost step on them sometimes if they're bedded to make a move. And that's why, you know, for a long time, I just thought dogs were what were required to hunt deer effectively, because you just can't get them to move, or they move and you hear them, but you can't see them, and they circle around and then they bed down someplace else. And you're just moving them around in circles, you know. But it was rarely bitter cold. It would get cool late in the season. And if you were still hunting, you know, maybe, or on a tree stand, you probably get pretty cold sometimes of the year, but most of the time it wasn't bitterly cold. Not at all like Iowa or the Midwest or something like that.
Right.
And, back then I didn't bow hunt. So I wasn't used to hunting in the warm weather either. It was always that late fall, just transitioning to winter, and it was like perfect temperatures.
Right. So are you from northern Mississippi or southern Mississippi?
I'm actually from central Mississippi, okay. Like almost a geographic center.
Okay.
And I would hunt in kind of southwest Mississippi.
Okay.
On occasion, I would go to northwest, which Mississippi, they call it the Delta.
Yes.
It's kind of like that ag region. And there the deer actually get much bigger than they do where I grew up hunting. But primarily I hunted we call them the hills and hollers of southwest Mississippi.
Gotcha. And that, yeah, I've had a guy on from Mississippi before who was telling me that he says he's hunted in a lot of states, but the variation from the northern part of Mississippi all the way to down to the coast is one of the most diverse states as far as terrain is concerned for hunting whitetails.
That's probably true. And now I live and hunt in Texas, and Texas isn't even quite as diverse, I don't think, you know, especially if you say you consider the size of Texas. It's not nearly as diverse as Mississippi is when it comes to hunting whitetail.
Mm-hmm. Do you still go back to Mississippi and hunt?
I don't. I keep saying every year that I'm going to go back and do some hunting there. But, you know, it's just so easy for me to hunt Texas. And I hunt up Oklahoma, too, because where I live in Texas, actually where I hunt in Oklahoma is closer to where I live in Texas than where I hunt in Texas is to where I live in Texas.
Gotcha.
So, to carve out time to go to Mississippi to hunt, you know, it's kind of tough. And, you know, we got pretty good animals in Texas. It's just like, what's the trade off to hunt there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we kind of took a little detour there, but you know, when it sounds to me like dogs, hunting with dogs was kind of like a big part of your life.
It was, and it was a lot of fun. But you know, the reason I transitioned from hunting with dogs was really because, okay, the way this hunting camp worked is, you get 20 guys, right? And right. you line them out across this 40 or 50 acres or something, not necessarily a big region, maybe bigger, right? And then you get one or two guys that are the dog handlers, and they push the deer with the dogs through the woods and hopefully run them into these other hunters, right?
Right.
And so you it's just kind of like your luck of the draw. Like, are you on the escape route that they choose that day?
Right.
And you know, the clubs can be a little cliquish, like any organization, right? You have guys that's like, well, that's my stand. I always get right there. Well, he's been hunting there for 15 years or something, yeah. And he knows that that's the primary escape route, right?
Yeah.
So you get guys that get there. They cherry pick locations and stuff like that. And I just got kind of frustrated with it, right? So because I was a member of the club, we had the opportunity to hunt on non-club hunts, like non-organized hunts. So like, but to do that, you'd have to come like on an off day, like a Monday or Tuesday or something like that, right? And so at this point, this is when I'm an adult and I'm still living in Mississippi, but you know, I work and have days off, so I take vacation. And I figured out, I said, well, let me go down there and hunt this other day or something, you know. So I did that once. It was right after a club hunt, an organized club hunt, and I had seen like a scrape line. I was like, man, I should come here and hunt this scrape line when there's no pressure in the woods. So I came back the following week, and man, I was in the tree 15 minutes. And shot at the time the biggest buck of my life, and I was like, "Oh my God, that's the ticket! Just get away from the crowd,
yeah.
Get the dog, scout, do your own scouting, find your own sign, and then go set up and hunt." What I didn't say is that this tree stand that I had was a climber, and the reason I had a climber was because I had started bow hunting already by that point. I had some guys that
how old were you?
Go ahead. I was about 23,
okay.
Maybe 23,
okay.
When I started bow hunting. So I worked in a factory as an engineer, and some of the guys in the maintenance department and some of the other engineers, they were bow hunters, and they were telling me about bow hunting. I was like, really? And they were like, oh yeah, man, you really should try it. I was like, but don't you have to be really close? And they're like, yeah. And it's like, don't you have to be really quiet and they can't smell you? It was just totally foreign. You know, I had all these standard questions.
Right.
And they said, but here's the thing. This was the tipping point for me to start bow hunting, was that at the time in Mississippi, you had like unlimited does that you could kill if you were killing them with a bow. And, you know, normally, let's say, I don't remember exactly, it was a long time ago, but let's say you get, at the time, you would get like maybe $2 or something, $2 or $3, or it might have been some odd, like $1 a day or whatever. But you only got like maybe 5 does. But if you shot them with a bow, it was unlimited. You could just keep killing doe after doe after doe. And I was like, wow, that's a lot of opportunity then. And
yeah.
Plus, you start at the beginning of October. I was like, oh, I got to try this. So a friend of mine at the factory, he set me up with, I bought a bow off of another guy at the factory. It was a used bow. I went by his house. He tuned it, showed me how to shoot. And from then on, I started shooting. Man, the second day I went bow hunting, I shot a doe. And I was like, this was a spot that I picked. You know, I scouted. The doe came in and I shot her. I was all by myself, no other help. I was like, this is unreal.
Right.
It's completely exhilarating. That experience was unlike any other experience I've had to that point. And so I said, this is what I'm about now. And I really only hunted with the club because that gave me access to, you know, hundreds of acres, you know,
yeah.
To bow hunt, you know, at these other opportune times that were not part of the organized dog drives and so forth. So that was how I got into that. But anyway, I had a tree stand, a climber, so I could move around and climb these trees. It's not like, you know, these cricket trees you have where you live, let's say, and you got to have hang-ons and climbing sticks. We just tack a climber as a pine tree or some other hardwood tree, and it's, you know, 80 feet tall, and you just climb up 20, 25, 30 feet, and you were good, you know.
Right. Wow. That's awesome. Now it's kind of funny. I don't know why I'm bringing this up now, but I was in Texas a couple weeks ago at the exact same time you were in Iowa, right?
Yeah,
Was that for work?
Yeah, I went up there for work.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So did you get the opportunity to like drive around out in the country or go, you know, go check out the scenery, the scenic views of Iowa at all?
Not really. I was in Des Moines, right?
Right.
And the client that I had to visit was in about 20 minutes outside of Des Moines.
Okay.
So, you know, once you get out of Des Moines that far, it starts to look fairly rural.
Right.
And I could see that, like, wow, this could be interesting. It's really funny. I made a funny post. It was kind of tongue in cheek about how many booners I saw as my plane was landing at Des Moines International. Right.
Right.
But
right
after I took that picture from the plane, I really did see deer. On our descent, I'm like, there really are deer right here, of course. But it was like some ag field. Now, I don't know if it was a buck, a doe, or, you know, whatever. Right. But I was like, man, this is awesome. I need to come hunt here.
Have you been putting in for points?
No, I haven't. I really need to. I just need to look at it a little more. I've been putting in points out west, but right. I haven't been putting in Iowa,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I tell everybody. Everybody's like, I would love to hunt Iowa. I would love to hunt Iowa. It's a commitment, not only financially, but from a time standpoint, too, because once you do draw the tag, right, you put in 4 years, maybe 5 years, you draw a tag, then you don't just come up for a week that year. You're coming up for, like, multiple weeks because it took you 4 years to draw that hunt. You know what I mean?
Right. I did find out, though, because – you know, we were having such bad weather here in Texas. We were kind of skeptical about the flight arrangements and stuff, or not the arrangements, but getting out and getting to Des Moines for this business trip, that we were like, well, what if we drove? You know, so we Googled how far Des Moines was from Dallas, and it was like 8 hours. I was like, oh, that's doable. So I immediately say, I could drive 8 hours for a scouting trip.
yeah. Hey. You're talking to a guy who's about to drive. Well, my wife doesn't know this yet. I know she doesn't listen to the podcast, so I got to keep it down because she could be right outside the door. But this summer at some point, I'm going to be taking a 10-hour drive to South Dakota, I think, for a scouting trip for mule deer.
There you go.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. She might be riding shotgun with me, but I don't know. It is what it is.
Yeah, that's kind of what you do now, you know. Yeah. So she'll love it and deal with it.
Yeah,
I told my wife, if I don't draw this antelope tag in Wyoming, then I'm gonna drive to Colorado, and hunt some over the counter antelope stuff.
Yeah,
in Colorado, and that's another, you know, 8-10 hour drive, and that's doable too from where I live.
Oh yeah, that's a day, right? You get up early, drive 10 hours, you're there probably still at sunrise or sunset, and then I don't know if you're gonna camp or grab a hotel, and then the next day, where the antelopes live anyway, it's probably not too high elevation.
That's right. I could deal with that.
Yeah. All right, so we're gonna switch gears now, and I want to talk to you a little bit about this buck that you ended up shooting in 2018 with your bow. And my first, mm-hmm. my first question is, was this buck that you shot, was he on the radar at the very beginning of the season? Did you and the guys that you hunt with know about him?
I knew about him, Dan. He was on my radar from 2 years before.
Okay.
So I first got on this lease in 2016.
Okay.
And I threw up a trail camera at the spot that my buddy helped me scout out and plan to set up. So we threw up a trail camera. And the first time I pulled the car, I saw this buck was the only buck on that picture. I mean, on that set of pictures, you know.
Yeah.
So this was like the summer of 2016. I saw this buck on the camera, and he was in velvet, obviously. And I had never – so let me back up slightly, if you don't mind. Let me back up. So when I left Mississippi, I moved to Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Then I hunted Pennsylvania for like 4.5 years, and I bow hunted there. And that was all public land. Then I moved to Texas, and by now I have a family. I have 2 sons, a wife. You know, we moved to Texas, and, you know, the idea of these Texas leases, to me, they were kind of outrageous in what it cost to be on a lease in Texas. So, like, a hunting club in Mississippi, if I spent $400 back when I was in my early 20s, that was a lot, you know, and as long as I was my dad's dependent, I think I got a 50% off discount. So my dad would pay like $400 for him and $200 for me, you know, after I was 16. So like 16 to 18. So it's really affordable, you know?
Right.
And then when I moved to Texas and people were, you know, telling you, you know, $2,000, I'm like, what? Are you crazy? I don't have $2,000 to pay for a lease. You know, my kids got to go to school. I got daycare. I got all of this other stuff. I was like, there's no way. So, and then my oldest son was into sports and all this stuff. He when we moved here, he was already like ninth grade or something like that. So my Thursdays and Fridays and all this stuff were taken up. And so I kind of like put my hunting on the back burner. Well, when my younger son, when he got to high school or like junior, senior year, and I didn't have to defer all of my downtime to his schedule for sports and so forth, I went back to hunting. So I picked up the bow again. And so anyway, that brought me to 2016.
Okay.
So now I stumbled into a lease. I was planning to hunt public ground. And I stumbled into a lease because I met a guy at work one day, and he just said, "Hey, I like your truck." And then I had my bow in the back seat, and my buddy Steve, and he says, "Wait a minute, are you a hunter?" And I was like, "Yeah." He was like, "Oh, well, we might have an opening on our hunting lease." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, how much is it?" Because if he's going to tell me, you know, $2,000 or $3,000, then I'm like, I appreciate the offer, you know. So anyway, I got an affordable lease that I became a member of, right?
Okay.
So Steve and I, we throw up this trail camera. I get a picture of this deer. He's in velvet. And I'm like, man, 16 years ago when I stopped hunting, we didn't have trail cameras, you know. We weren't using those back then. This is pretty cool. So I saw these pictures of this deer in velvet, and I'm like, man, that's awesome. Look how thick this looks and how white and soft this velvet looks on this deer. It looks like it's just smoke coming out of his head, you know. So I named this deer Smokey, you know.
Yeah.
Now all these hunting, so everybody names their deer, right?
Right, right.
You know. So I was like, Smokey, yeah, it looks like smoke's coming out of his head, you know. So anyway, so that was my first, I call it a soft encounter because it was just pictures of this deer. And I got a few more, you know, but I don't know if you know, but in Texas, certain counties have antler restrictions. Did they talk to you about that when you were down here the other week?
No, because I was in an area that was like all high fence.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't.
Yeah, so.
They had a completely different management schedule or, you know, situation than what I'm sure you guys even had.
Yeah. So what happens is certain counties, I think it even applies to high fence though. Well, I can't say that.
Okay.
But anyway, certain counties have antler restrictions, which mean that the inside spread on the buck has to be at least 13 inches.
Okay.
Right? So you might have a mature deer that just kind of has, let's just say, a junkie rat, you know?
Right.
He may not be legal. He could be 7 years old, and he just is not legal to take, you know? And I think it's a loose attempt for the Texas Parks and Wildlife to kind of regulate the deer quality, right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, but you can also take, in my county, you can take one spike also. You know, as long as the deer has at least one side that's unbranched, you can take one spike, and then you get one buck that's greater than 13 inches.
Okay.
And then you get about, I think we get three does. Yeah, you get three does. So when I first saw this deer, although he was probably the most impressive deer I'd ever seen, I wasn't sure that he was legal, because it was right. They say the guideline is, you know, the alert ear distance from ear tip to ear tip is about 13 or 14 inches. So this deer was questionable because he was kind of right at the ears. So I just kind of looked at it like, it's a really nice deer. Maybe someday he'll be big enough, or maybe there's another one that I just don't have a picture of, or maybe I just got to worry about getting a few deer for the freezer or something, you know?
Right.
But anyway, that was the extent of it.
Okay. So how old was he? The first, upon your estimates, how old do you think that deer was when, you know, you first saw him in 2016?
I think it was about 3.5.
Okay.
Maybe more, maybe 4.5, but I think 3.5 was probably pretty accurate. Maybe 4.5.
Okay. So let's just say, conservatively, he's a 3.5-year-old deer, which would have made him a 5-year-old in 2018 when you shot him. Okay. So in 2016, you started this leash, you put your trail cameras out, you got some pictures of him, you gave him a name. Did you have any encounters with him throughout 2016?
I did. He came in like around early November.
Okay.
Actually, it was November 5th, because I have a picture of him at the same time. So he comes in, and he's one in front of my trail camera, and then two, I'm looking at him from I'm hunting from a pop-up ground blind. So I'm like, oh yeah, that's him. He's right at the ears, so I can't shoot him. And man, my heart was racing, you know. So now I see him like, this is hard horn, live, living color, 18 yards, and I'm watching this deer for like 15 minutes and I can't shoot him.
Yeah.
I was like, man, this is like sacrilegious in Mississippi. You know?
Right. Right.
It's like, I grew up, if it was brown, he was going down, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
And here is the biggest buck of my life, and he's standing 18 yards from me. I just have to admire him, you know? But I was committed to be legal, of course. And that's just what I had to do.
So
he came in, fed for a little while, and that was it.
So let me ask you this. Was there any other deer on your trail camera or on your lease that was bigger than him? Or was this just one of those instances where, hey man, the law says 14 inches or 13 inches, I just can't shoot him? No, knowing he's technically a shooter?
He was the only one I had on my camera. Now on my lease, there's probably 8 or 9 other guys, right? And we kind of share some pictures, you know, a little bit, but yeah, guys kind of hold that close to the vest a little bit. Cause you know, I wouldn't do it and nobody's done it to me, but you know, you might think that that guy might go hunt my blind one day that I'm not there, you know,
right.
and shoot my number one or something. But, anyway, I can't remember exactly that guys had bigger deer pictures at the time. Now, historically, some of the guys that have been there, you know, 10, 15 years, they've killed big deer before. So I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, I got to certainly hold out. And he's only 13 inches. Maybe I'm not going to chance it because there could be a better buck walking around here and just, Yeah, and this was early. It's still November, and it's early pre-rut, you know, early pre-rut. You know, who knows what's going to show up in another week or two.
Right. All right, so let me ask you this. On the on this lease, how many acres would you say were yours or that you had accessibility to on this lease?
I would say, well, it's kind of weird. You know, I think we have, let's say something about like 2,000 acres, right?
Right.
And let's say there's 10 guys. So it, the law averages, I mean, not law of averages, you average that out and it's, you know, 200 acres a guy, right?
Right.
But the way it's, the way the rules are set up, you don't move around and scout different spots and go hunt here one day and hunt this part of your 200 acres another day, or you don't do that. You kind of get one setup, you know, the guy, you know, here in Texas, we use feeders.
Yep.
So you throw a feeder up and you can hunt that feeder in that area. The imminent area of the feeder, I'd say. And that's what you're relegated to.
Okay. Man, I hear this and it just drives me crazy. Right. And I know we had this conversation the last time you were on the podcast about how, you would, you know, a lot of the times that the big bucks, the mature bucks, they're not directly visiting the feeder in daylight. So you have to hunt on the outskirts of the feeder, right, to try to catch them coming mm-hmm. in. So, mm-hmm. so did this kind of throw a wrench in your strategy at all, like adjusting to the rules of the lease?
It did, because I'd never hunted this way before. Remember, this is my first year hunting in Texas. So, you know, I not just come from Pennsylvania, but the last time I hunted Pennsylvania, you know, you go out, it's public land, you go scout, you throw up a stand, or you hunt wherever you want to hunt, you know. And then even in Mississippi, you know, on those off days when we weren't having those club hunts, you do the same thing. You hunt anywhere you wanted to on the club property. And I hunted some public land in Mississippi. There's some national refuges and things that you can get permitted to hunt in. It's the same thing there. You go scout it, you hunt wherever you want to within the boundaries, you know?
Right.
And so having this isolated piece to hunt in Texas was very different than what I had been accustomed to.
Right. Okay. All right. So 2016, you had a couple, was that the only encounter you had with him, or did you have?
That's the only encounter I had with him.
Okay. All right. So you knew this deer was a 3-year-old, potentially a 4-year-old. You had an encounter with him. Season comes to an end. No one else on your lease ends up shooting him. Did anybody else see him?
No.
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 Okay. So he was relatively a homebody, huh?
Yeah, he was. I never saw him again. Nobody else saw him again. And that was it, you know?
Okay.
Now, there is another ranch, if you will, like next door to our property.
Okay.
And they gun hunt there. I didn't say this, but my lease is like pretty much archery only, right? It's archery only. But the neighboring property is, you know, once rifle season starts, you hear a few gunshots there. So I never know if he's going to wander over there, you know, because gun season comes closer to that rut period.
Right.
I don't know if he's going to wander over there and he got shot or whatever, you know.
Okay. All right. So when did you know that he was still alive in 2017?
So 2017, I didn't get any summer pictures of him, nothing in velvet.
Okay.
But then he showed up. He showed up in probably October. I know he definitely showed up in late October, you know. But and I got pictures of him. In fact, he got bigger, of course. And we had a wet spring in 2017. We had a wet year, so there was a lot of you know, forage for the deer. I think, you know, by all accounts, he kind of grew quite a bit that year, and he looked every bit of a shooter by the time I got a decent photo of him. And he had gone from an 8-point. I probably didn't say that. He was an 8-point in 2016. 2017, he had grown another point on his right side, and he had a kicker on his left G2 then. I was like, oh my God, what a stud, you know. and at that point I got a really good picture of him because I moved the camera, you know, I moved my camera, and I got a really good picture of him, like just standing all majestic, just, you know, broadside.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, kind of quarter and two, and I was like, oh my God, you know, he, what a stud. He's a shooter, no doubt about it.
Yep.
And so anyway, I hunt that season. I mean, start, you know, I'm already hunting then. And, you know, just things happen, work. And by now I'm also hunting Oklahoma. So I don't always go to my Texas leagues. I'm kind of, you know, hunting a few different places. And I didn't go there for like 3 weeks, around 3 weeks, you know, just the way things worked out. And what I'll typically do is my camera is not too far from my blind. So I'll pull my camera card like one evening as I'm coming out of the blind. I'll pull the card then and swap it out and then go back and check pictures, right?
Right.
So I hadn't been in 3 weeks, and I checked my card this time. And I'm looking at the pictures, and you would not believe it. I almost cried, Dan. That sucker, what came to my stand every day for like, it was about 18 days in a row.
Are you kidding me?
In daylight. And I hadn't been there in 3 weeks. And I was like, are you kidding me? I hunted the weekend before this first picture I got. And then I have no pictures. You know, well, later I found that I didn't have any more pictures of him after I started back hunting again. I was like, did he pattern me? Did he figure out that I was, was he winding me and just not coming in? Did he go off on another doe? Did he get shot? You know, I just didn't know what happened. I was like, did I just blow this? You know, I hadn't seen him in like a year. And then all of a sudden, he's here for two, 3 weeks straight. And I'm not here to capitalize on it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was just sick.
Yeah.
And I started thinking that, man, I just ruined this. He pegged me. He knew where I parked. He was watching me, smelling me.
Yeah.
I started reevaluating all of my regimen. You know, I told you I was kind of a scent freak, right?
Right.
So I was like, man, what have I done wrong? You know, maybe I need to regroup. I was just, you know, he just sent my mind in a tailspin, just trying to figure out where I had gone wrong.
Yeah. All right, so what did he do in the antler department from 2016 to 2017?
He blew the hell up.
Yeah.
that's what he did.
Yeah.
So we had another wet summer, so I was like, man, I hope he gets even more trash and stickers and kickers and stuff. And anyway, my stupid trail camera took a crap like right before, like, I mean, literally like 2 weeks before hunting season. And I had no pictures of him all summer again. I was like, so it's like September and it's like the last visit I make out there. Cause this is like 3 hours from where I live. So when I go, I'm going for the weekend, you know? Yeah. So anyway, I go out there like once a month during the summer or off season, whatever, just kind of clean things up or check stuff out. And, anyway, I get out there in September, I pull my card and there are no pictures on it. I was like, are you kidding me? So I was like, well, that's okay. I grew up not hunting with cameras. I'm not going to worry about it right now. We're right, you know, opening days right around the corner. Just get in the blind and see what happens, you know? So that's what I did. Hunted there. I had no pictures of him. So I had no idea what he was like. And at this point, I don't know if he ever got shot from 2017. I had zero pictures from about December of 2017 until now. You know, I never had any pictures, or now being, you know, the hunting season 2018. So I didn't know what he had done. But I'm sitting in the blind Well, you didn't ask me this, but the way I knew what he did was when I put him on the ground.
Yeah.
So I'm there hunting the day. This is late October that I'm hunting him, and and you know, I get like a little young eight point buck come in, and he's feeding. I'm just, this is early, like 7:30. He's feeding. I'm just watching him, and then I noticed that something catches his attention, and I look to the left to say, "Well, what's drawing his attention?" You know, I really thought it was just more deer coming in, right? So I look over there, and there's this brushy trail that leads into my area, and I see this deer with his head down coming under this brush. You know, how they have to get their antlers out of their way so they don't get hung up and all this stuff.
Yep.
He's coming through there like that. And I'm like, oh my God, that's him. Because his rack is really, really tight, actually. And the times, they don't like go up in like this classical whitetail buck formation. They kind of go up and they curve in, like everything curves to the center, like they want to touch and meet in the middle. Even the main beam curves around like it wants to meet in the middle, right? So I recognized him immediately, like, boom, that's him, you know? I didn't say Smokey, but I just said, that's him, you know? And so I turned back to pick my bow up. I think I had it on like a little kickstand on the ground. I turned to get my bow, and I turned back, and I see a doe running away, like away from us. And I was like, oh shucks, I didn't see that doe. And then I was like, man, he's gonna take off after her. So he didn't exactly. He looked at her, and then he looked at this little 8-point buck that's out in front of me. And I was like, man, do I shoot at him in this gap right here? You know, I'm so excited because I'm like, I hadn't seen him. This is only the second time I've seen him on the hoof. You know, I was like, should I take this shot? He's going to walk across this 40-yard shot. You know, I got one little window. I was like, no, I can't take that shot. You know, and this is happening really fast. It's not like, you know, you think of all this stuff in like seconds, right? And so I wait, and he crosses the little window that I considered. And then he spotted this little 8-point buck by now. And then this 8-point buck kind of runs away, and the deer makes a beeline. The big buck makes a beeline towards him, and then he kind of runs that deer away, and then he starts feeding, but he's not, I can't shoot him where he's standing because it's just too many trees. And I was like, oh man. So I'm just ready. My heart's pumping. And then he's feeding and he's walking. I was like, man, two more steps. I think I'm gonna get a shot right here. So I'm getting ready, and he just stops and turns and runs away in the direction that doe had gone. I was like, are you kidding me? He's at like 20 yards and it's two steps from me being ready to draw back. And he turns and runs away. And I put my head down and I was like, man, all this time, all these hours of sitting here, all this effort, and that's the sum of what my experience is gonna be with him? You know, I was just dejected. And I tell people all the time, I literally started praying right there. This is like one of those little kids' prayers, like when you say, oh, bring me that red wagon or the taco truck, dear God. I'm saying, oh, God, please bring this bug back to me. I did that little 8-year-old boy that loved hunting. I was doing one of those kind of prayers, man. I'm like, oh my God, I need this deer back.
I'll be good. I promise I'll be good.
That's right.
Oh yeah. Man. And he never, did he ever show back up?
Man. So he ran off presumably after this doe. Right. And then, about 15 minutes later, probably about 30 minutes later, I'm sitting there and I'm calmed down now. I'm still kind of dejected. I'm like, okay, just shake it off. It's hunting, you know, there'll be another time, whatever. Man, I look up and this sucker is coming right back down another trail. But basically from the direction that he ran off, he's coming right back in there. Okay. And I'm like, there he is again. So I grabbed the bow. I was like, and he's coming straight at me, you know, but I don't have a shot. It's not really a shooting lane. And I'm like, okay, if he turns to my right, his left, I got a really good shot. If he turns to my left, his right, then he's right back where he was last time when I couldn't get a shot and he turned and ran off. So sure enough, he turns right back to that spot. I was like, are you kidding me? And I was like, okay, just stay calm. Just wait. And then he's taking a step, you know, he's just feeding, taking a step. I was like, is this going to happen? And then now I see like his head and neck kind of coming into my shooting window. And I was like, oh, this is going to really happen. So I kind of leaned to my right to kind of use the one of the vertical strips of my blind to, I mean, you're in the blind and it's black, but you know, I'm like, I can't bust it. Let me kind of lean over here and draw. So I lean over and draw back. And then I could see the deer kind of stop. And I was like, oh my God, did he hear me? Did I make a noise? Is he about to bolt out of here? And then he put his head back down and started feeding. I was like, oh, okay, good. Maybe just was doing that. So I get to my anchor. And I'm just waiting. And I'm like, it seems like an eternity. It was probably 15 seconds at the most, but it seemed like 15 minutes. Yeah. And I'm waiting on him to take, you know, just one more step. And then, you know, he's not quite there. And for whatever reason, I kind of look to where his body is. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I can shoot right there. You know, a different lane just kind of appeared to me.
Yeah.
He wasn't where I wanted to shoot him, but he was in a place that I could shoot. Yeah. And I was like, wait, I think I can squeeze an arrow through there. And then I'm like, man, this is really going to happen now. Because now I've told myself, you can shoot this arrow. And I'm like, this is going to happen. It's like, calm down, Dan. Don't let your heart run away. You know, I'm like trying to talk myself into making the shot, but not blowing the shot either, you know. And I just put the pin on him. He was 22 yards, and I squeeze it off, and I hear a thud, and it was kind of muddy. So he drops down, and he wheels, and he runs out of there, and he was literally kicking mud up as he ran off. And I was like, did I hit him? You know, I'm shooting light at Knox, but I'm like, did I hit him? I think I made a good shot. Oh, my God. Did this just happen? So he runs off, right? And then at the same time, I see another deer come in from the left, and it's a buck. And this deer runs in there, and he's looking in the direction that this deer ran off. I was like, well, wait a minute, where'd that deer come from? And then I'm like, why is he looking over there? You know, it just, all this stuff started happening. I'm just like, well, what's going on? I'm trying to read it, but, you know, I'm trying to calm down again.
Yeah.
Excuse me, calm down again now, too. So this deer, he runs off over there, too. I was like, oh, man, I bet he's running away with this deer. He picked him up and decided I better bolt the way he's going, too. So that deer runs off. And so I was like, well, let me give it at least 30 minutes and I'll get out and go see if I can find my arrow or see any blood where I saw him standing. So before that happens, here comes two more little bucks. So these two more bucks come in before this 30-minute time limit that I've applied to myself expires. And I was like, oh, crap. So now I got to sit here. I don't want to spook these deer and wait for them to, you know, do their business and move on too. So I'm sitting there waiting on these bucks to leave, these young, really young bucks, like yearling bucks. And something piques their interest and they look to the right, to my right. And I'm like, well, what's over here? And then all of a sudden, actually one of those deer was out in the, like this trail and he was stomping. I was like, what's he stomping at? And then the other deer looks to the right. So I look down there, and all of a sudden, here comes a herd of hogs. We're covered up in wild hogs. Yeah. Here comes about 10 to 15 wild hogs. They come running in there. I was like, oh, God. So now here they are. I was like, well, one of you guys is going to get stuck because I'm ready to get out this blind and go look and see if I shot this deer. So I shot one of those hogs. She runs off, and then she runs right over to where the deer was when I shot him or shot at him. And they finally all scatter. I was like, okay, let me make sure they're gone. I don't want to get attacked by a bunch of, you know, wild hogs. So I wait a little bit, and I go out there. And I find my arrow, and it's covered in blood. I was like, yes, exactly what I wanted to see. But I don't see any blood right there from the deer. I see a bunch of hog blood because, it was just standing near there. I was like, well, now I've got to go track this deer. So I'm looking around, don't see any blood. I was like, well, he ran this way. Let me just go around these trees here and just kind of look down this big trail. That I had seen this one of these young bucks stomping while he was standing in that trail. So I go stand in the trail, and I look 40 yards up the trail, and I see this huge set of antlers sticking up out of the grass. And I just started jumping for joy, and my fists were in the air. And I run down the thing, and then I just like, oh, my God, that's him. And I lost it. I became emotional. I'm not this emotional guy, but I was like, man, what I've gone through, this was it. It all culminated the way I needed it to. It was unbelievable.
Man, that's nuts. That's nuts, man. So I always like to ask this question because I think it's a little bit different for every single hunter, but at the same time, it's the same. What was your emotions or feeling when you actually walked up to him, you bent over, and you grabbed his antlers for the first time?
Man, I really just couldn't believe it. He was just as impressive. You know how you worry about ground shrinkage?
Yeah.
There was no shrinkage, man. Yeah. He was even more impressive because He had one of his brow tines almost split. So he almost had a split brow tine. He was a 10 pointer at this point. And I didn't know that. When I saw him, I just knew it was him from the geometry of his rack. I didn't count points or any of that, I just said, he's a shooter, that's him, And so this was the first, and I had no pictures of him. Remember, I haven't had a picture of him since December of the year before.
Yeah.
So I didn't even count the point. I just held it. It was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And I started pacing, and my heart rate went up again. And I was like, what do I do? And then I was like, you're there by yourself. And I'm like, who do I tell? I need to tell somebody. So it's almost 9 o'clock now. So I called my wife. I'm like, I got to call her. I call her, goes the voicemail. I was like, oh, crap, she's in the bed. So then I called my dad, I called my dad. He's like, what is it? I was like, I got him. And he's like, what is it? Got what? I was like, that buck, the big one. And he was like, I think he was at church or something, like working or doing something. I don't know where he was. And I hear him tell my mom. My mom's name is Ann. My dad says, Ann, get on the phone. This is Danny. Your son's on the phone. He's crying. So he hands the phone to my mom, and my mom says, what's the matter? I was like, I got him, Mama, I got him. She's like, what? I was like, the big beard. She's like, well, why are you crying? I was like, I don't know. So...
And no, like, just to tell everybody, how old are you at this? Like, how old are you?
47.
Okay, you're 47 years old, acting like a kid.
Yes. And I call my, I'm talking to my mama crying on the phone. And now I'm telling all your 2 million listeners about it.
Oh, man. That's great. And I tell you what, that's awesome, because that just, dude, I'm with you. Like, I get emotional when I shoot deer. And like when I call my wife, she always asks me, "What happened? What happened to you? What's going on? Why are you emotional?" I'm like, I just shot my buck. You know, like my voice gets real high and pitchy and all that stuff. And we all get fired up. And I think that's awesome that hunting means so much to us, and we have so much of a passion towards these animals that it makes us almost emotionally break down after we're successful.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's so cliche to say blood, sweat, and tears, you know, that you put into something. And to that point, it had only been the blood and the sweat, mostly sweat, a little bit of blood, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of work. It's an adventure, you know, to scout it, to take pictures, to think that you're busted, to revamp your techniques and your approach, all the practice, the bow tune, you know, visualizing the moment, you know, switching releases, building more arrows, all of the stuff you do. And it's really for about 30 seconds. Like that day, I saw this deer for a total of maybe 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this is a two and a half year journey. And it was just for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And you know, the weirdest part of all of it is, as happy as I was, it's kind of anticlimactic, because what really made me enjoy bow hunting is the journey and the chase.
Yeah.
You know, the shot and the harvest, the kill, that's just the icing on the cake. But it's the chase that just keeps you going and going and going and going. And I was like, wow, I won't get to hunt him anymore. You know, there'd be another deer, and there'd be another story that develops, another narrative, if you will. But this one comes to an end, and I'm like, I don't want it to end. So it took me a while to kind of shake that and say, okay, go on to the next one. You know,
yeah.
It's a very, very, I didn't know I would feel that way. I never felt that way before.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. So congratulations, man. What did, you know, just for a visual aspect, what did this deer end up scoring?
He grossed. So first of all, this is the only, I'm not a real record book guy.
Yeah.
I wasn't until this point. And so I get back to camp. I call my buddy Steve, right? Steve's hunting on another part of the property. Well, actually, I think I texted him and I said, man, I just shot the big buck, you know? He's like, really? He said, cool, man. I was like, I'm coming to pick you up. So I go get my, cause he rode with me. So I drive back to camp, and I have to drive by camp to get to his hunting location, right? And so I saw a couple guys at camp. I said, man, I just shot a good one. And he's like, really? You need some help? I was like, I do, but let me go get Steve first. Because Steve and I had put in all this work there. You know what I mean? He's my hunting buddy. So
right,
I was like,
right.
I got to go get Steve. You know, Steve's got to retrieve this deer with me, you know. So I go pick up Steve, and then we come back, and then we go down there. And like that picture that you saw, Steve took that photo. You
okay.
Know? So Steve helps me, you know, get propped up to take a picture of this deer and all of that. And he ends up helping me drag him out and everything. We get back to camp. And all the guys from camp were like, they were so congratulatory and so excited. And like, even the principals on our lease, right? They're like, man, we've been out here 15, 20, 25 years. This is one, this may be my favorite deer I've seen out here, you know, just the character of his antler structure just was kind of special.
Yeah.
But anyway, I probably didn't end up telling you, he was a 10. He almost split a split one of his brow ties. He had a little bit of trash, like he was trying to get some kickers off the front of his bases. They're just like big bumps. They're not really a time or a point. But anyway, so he ended up being a typical 10. And he scored he grossed 150 even, and he netted 144 and 5/8.
Hey, man, that's a good deal.
And it is a good deal. And most of it's in the mass. You know, most of it's in his mass. He scored mostly in the mass, not so much the timely. So that made it kind of special. But I've never shot a Pope and Young deer before, you know, or a deer that would have scored Pope and Young had he been shot with a bow. I've never shot one this big before.
Yeah.
And I really didn't. I mean, I'm not one for scoring, but the guys were like, "Hey, you gonna enter him in Pope and Young?" I was like, "You think he makes Pope and Young?" And they were like, "Heck yeah!" And then so we did a rough score there. One of the guys was real good. He did a rough score there, and he was. I was like, "Well, even with deductions, man, there's no way he loses 25 inches in deductions, right?" And he's like, "No, not nearly. He'll go 140, 145 pretty easily with deductions." And he was spot on.
Well, congrats, my friend. That's awesome. I always like hearing about guys who, you know, they're really getting into it, and then they end up shooting their biggest buck ever. And you know, I'm not a guy who cares too much about, you know, scoring per se, but I do like hearing stories, and I do like, you know, talking to guys, and they get excited, and it brings that passion back to hunting and whatnot about, you know, shooting their biggest buck. And it makes them, you know, it just makes everybody remember, you know, it's different for everybody, but it makes us all remember why we do it. And I don't know. I get fired up about it.
I'm the same way, Dan. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you, your congratulations, and I appreciate you allowing me to come on the show and on the podcast and tell my story about it. And I look forward to the next one, man. I look forward to the next opportunity. Hopefully it might be a Pope and Young animal out west, or just a good experience. I'm totally consumed with it, just like I was, you know, when I was 8 years old.
Right.
40 years ago, yeah.
And that's what counts, man. Well, I tell you what, man, really appreciate you hopping on today, and go do it again, and then come back on.
Yeah, and I'm going to start putting in points for Iowa.
There you go. There you go. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another podcast in the books. Huge shout out to my man, Dan, for hopping on the podcast, taking time out of his day to chat with us. Huge, big, fat, morbidly obese shout out to each and every one of you who continues to support the Sportsman's Nation and the Nine Finger Chronicles, man. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate it. Again, keep an eye out for the trailer, the Sportsman's Nation trailer of the turkey film that we're calling Tradition. It's not even really about turkey hunting per se, but it revolves around turkey season. So keep an eye out for that. Huge shout out to all the partners of this podcast: Prime, Ozonix, Ripcord, Lone Wolf, Hunter Safety Systems, Wasp Archery, Lone Wolf. I think I've said all that. Please go out and support the companies that support this podcast, and in turn, they keep supporting me, and then I can keep putting awesome podcasts into your ears. So thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Other than that, social media, Instagram, Facebook. If you're not following the Sportsman's Nation on Instagram, please go do that. Please go to iTunes, leave a review. Please subscribe to all of the podcasts, right? Whether you like the network feed or you want one of the standalone feeds, please go, go subscribe to what you like to listen to. Also, share this information, right? Go tell your friends about this podcast. If you like this, spread the word, because word of mouth, man, that's a game changer, especially on content that we're putting out. And obviously we want to grow and we could use your help. Lastly, keep an eye out for all of the, there's going to be some major giveaways coming through the Sportsman's Nation and the Nine Finger Chronicles. So please keep an eye out for that. And lastly, it's that time of year where we're going to start thinking about getting tree stands up, you know, get our, you know, getting prepared for the upcoming season. And if you're going to be in a tree, our friends at Hunter Safety Systems are reminding us to please wear your damn safety harness. Have a good rest of the week.